Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 378, huge episode number 378. We're calling this one the Scary Good Edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you're going to like what we have coming at you. There's a lot of really, really cool and really fun things that we have planned, and hopefully this episode's actually going to come out sounding all right. There's a lot of different things that we're trying to see if we can fiddle through here. For those of you who don't know, didn't follow on Twitter or anything else, or you've never even heard this episode before, recently upgraded to Windows 7. And I gotta tell you, it's on one hand, it's like getting a new computer. On the other hand, I had to actually stop using the venerable Creative Labs Sound Blaster Live because Creative unfortunately refuses to create drivers for Windows Vista for this card. Even though the card is perfectly serviceable, the company obviously isn't. So I gotta tell you, on one hand, I'm not gonna be using Creative Labs for products I buy in the future. So I understand that I bought the card a significant period of time ago. I have actually four different versions of that card that are all sitting in my house, but I can't get any of them to work with Windows 7, and I will refuse to blame Microsoft on this. Microsoft put out the dev kits in enough time. Creative Labs has just said that the cards are too old. They don't feel like developing drivers for them. So that being what it is, and this being what we are, this is where we are. So hopefully the sound's coming through loud and clear, or not necessarily loud, but clear, definitely. But we're trying to use the onboard sound card until I can get a new rig up and running, so this is the 378th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're still trying to make sure everything all works out and gets done the correct way around here. So please excuse the growing pains for this episode, because we're trying to make sure that we actually give you the same kind of good product that you've come to know and expect from us. And I say that with a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek there, but if you are looking for this or any of the other fine products, you can head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. That's where you're going to find all the other hijinks. You'll also find information such as the listener line if you'd like to call in, leave a message. That's 215-240-1319. You can also contact us on almost any social network at Caffeination. That includes Twitter, so twitter.com/caffeination. We do have a Facebook fan page up that's gaining steam, and we're starting to push different little bits of content out to that, so hopefully you enjoy that. And last but most certainly not least, you can send comments, email, suggestion, hate mail, whatever you feel, over to caffeination@gmail.com. I am definitely off my game today, and I gotta tell you, I think it's more because that I don't have the same sound in my ears. I actually had to turn down the sound on the mixer because I see myself bottoming out. And when you're doing audio, and if what I mean by bottoming out means that actually the little waveforms that I see on the monitor are actually going beyond the spectrum. It's called clipping, and on my particular waveform, it's actually the bottom end that's clipping, not the top. The top would be, you know, like pops and things like that, usually. It's just the frequency that's actually going beyond the range that the microphone's currently capable of handling, and that's the issue we are. So, this is the Scary Good Edition. We're going to try and run through a literal ton of stuff. There is a veritable plethora, one of my favorite phrases. Not a four-wheel drive plethora either, but there's a veritable plethora of content to go over today, so we're going to try and get on in and hit the nitty and or the gritty as quickly as possible. I already told you where you can get this show. I also, I think I might have neglected to mention the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All of the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational stuff, and they're all listed over at techpodcasts.com. Also, if you check over blog.techpodcast.com, you can find some really cool stuff that's over there. It's a weekly show called the TPN Weekly, where everybody agrees to put new and interesting content up every week. My episode was actually last week, so there's a new episode going to be up shortly, at least tomorrow, I think. It's by Buana McCall of Buana.org Radio. So it's going to be fun, and you can head on over there and check all that. Alright, before we get into too much further here, I would like to make mention of the fact that the Caffeination is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. If you have business contacts in LA, in New York, everywhere, England, and it doesn't matter where they are, you'd like to meet them all more often, but traveling is expensive and it consumes a whole ton of your time. That's why you want to use GoToMeeting to hold meetings online. Brought to you by Citrix, GoToMeeting is the easiest online meeting service available. Simply set up your meeting in advance, on the start, or have one on the fly. It doesn't really matter. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and they can now see your computer desktop on their screen. So it's just like you're meeting in person, but you use a lot less see your resources to do this. You can host unlimited meetings for just one low flat rate. Our listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited online meetings free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts for a free trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They're allowing us to do all kinds of crazy and cool stuff that we're doing here. So we have a ton of great stuff, and we might as well get on up in it. So we've actually kind of revived the Caffeination Tumblr blog, if you don't know what that is. It's just little bits of random detritus that I find lying around. I call it all the cruft and none of the chaff. The chaff's a little bit of a shell that actually exists on the outside of the coffee bean that usually gets roasted right off. So it's all the interesting little bits that don't make it into the show. Some of them even do, but it's kind of fun to see some of the stuff that ends up over there. That's over at caffeination.tumblr.com. Of course, the username is Web 2.0 compliant, so they had to remove at least one vowel. That's where the E went, just in case you were wondering. It's kind of like it. I think that E is hanging out with the E from Flickr, and you know, who knows. I don't know why Web 2.0 went down that path, but I got to tell you, so far, Windows 7 has been a blessing and a curse. I really kind of do dislike the fact that I had to remove my sound card, but I kind of looked back on it. I bought the sound card, I think, in 2001, so it served me for 8 years. The only problem is I just feel a little bit betrayed that I can't use it anymore. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it's just a little frustrating, and I'm more frustrated at the company than I am at Microsoft. But everything else went smoothly. I did fresh installs on both machines. I actually did try and do an upgrade, and that went okay. And people are saying, "Oh, it took hours." No, Microsoft's warning you that it can take hours. It didn't take hours. It took less than an hour the one time I tried it, and fresh installs were up and running in under 40 minutes, I would say. So it's been really nice. It's really kind of slick and spiffy and all that other stuff. And a lot of the different things that I was used to doing in XP can't really do yet in Windows 7. That's just because I don't know all the tips and tricks yet. And I had almost a decade with XP to actually figure all the tricks out, so I'm willing to give this a nice good long running start to actually check all that out. Alright, up first in the Geekcraft section here, get serious about being green, the dog needs to go. Now this is a late addition here to the Caffeination, but I gotta tell you, I was actually kind of taken aback by this, but they're saying for people who want to really reduce their carbon footprint, you need to not have any pets, which I was kind of understanding of. It's like, as soon as you phrase it that way, it's like, okay. They say cats are pretty much worthless, same with dogs, except dogs actually end up using a lot more of your resources. This goes from resources that it takes to feed them, like the cows that they eat and things like that. Not that you have to actually have cows or raise cows, but you know that the meat that comes in those cans actually has to come from somewhere. It also deals with the grain and other things like that. So it's interesting in that aspect. It also talks about their excrement, the things that are used to contain the excrement. It goes from the lengths to width and breadth. This says basically if you own a dog, depending on the size of the dog, it's basically like having an extra car in your family. If you own a cat, it's kind of like having another plasma TV. If you own a goldfish, it's kind of they just go down the list to all the different stuff like that. But they said a Toyota Land Cruiser, a 4.6 liter engine, actually has the same carbon footprint of a medium sized dog. So since we have a small sized dog and two sized cats, I'm pretty sure it's kind of like having a 9-car family or something like that. So there's definite sacrifices that would have to be made if you really want to get your carbon footprint down really nice and low. I just thought I'd pass it along because I thought it was pretty funny. For all of those of you who dislike having pets, this is going to be a little bit more ammo in your cannon there, but for everybody who enjoys pets, this might even irritate you. I don't even know. All right, next little thing we have up for you here, in honor of Halloween or Samhain coming up, then we have a whole bunch of interesting little spooky things here. There's a portrait of Edgar Allan Poe. Edgar Allan Poe is probably one of my favorite authors. I like some of the way that he describes things. I like the imagery that he uses to do so. I really just enjoy his stories overall. I'm not sure if I could pick any one story out specifically that, you know, it embodies what it means to be a Poe fan, or what it means to really enjoy the man's work. But it's kind of fun that there's actually a comic that was recently posted up online over at goldenagecomicbookstories.blogspot.com, and if that wasn't a long enough URL, then I have a fun link in the show notes. But it's actually a republishing of the pages from the Telltale Heart from the June 1965 edition of Creepy, which is a really cool comic book name, first of all. And I love the Telltale Heart. I'm not really sure. I'm pretty sure I've seen some of these illustrations before, but never all collected together. They also have a Cask of Amontillado up there, which is from Creepy number 6. Cask of Amontillado is probably one of my all-time favorite. I'm not a real big fan of the Fall of the House of Usher. I do enjoy The Mask of Red Death, and I haven't seen that one on here. But I gotta tell you, there it is. Never mind. If you enjoy Edgar Allan Poe and you enjoy comic books, or if you just like experiencing stories in a different aspect, then you can head on over here and check some of these things out. They are really, really stunning renditions of some really cool Poe works. Alright, next little thing that we have up for you here is an article from over at Gizmodo.com. It says there's still time for DIY Halloween decor. They actually took a bunch of different posts from over at Make, and they pushed them up online. They said, hey, you know, you can actually have a drifting ghost on your thing. You can have create your own crashed UFO prop. Geeks and Halloween kind of go together like peanut butter and jelly. I don't really know exactly what I'm going to be this year, but I'm thinking it might be somewhere in the robot vein. Or I know that Paul's actually being a tiger just because he really liked the costume that he saw in the store. But we're probably going to get into in the next couple years. We're probably definitely going to get into making our own costumes again. I really enjoyed that when I was growing up. It was always a little bit more interesting to try and do create your own experience that way. But I wanted to kind of pass along a couple little ideas for the Halloween decor. Unfortunately, most of the stuff you have to buy different things to actually get up and running correctly. So who knows? All right, next little thing we have up for you here. This story's been making the rounds rather virally, should I say. A guy on Craigslist seeks an amputee for a Halloween costume. Now, before you get up in arms, I know that's a little bit of a pun there, and I honestly didn't intend it, but before you get up in arms, you really kind of need to understand one thing. I don't think this guy is completely out of line. At one point in time during the movie, there is a scene where, during a Star Wars movie, there is a scene where Chewbacca is actually carrying a half-assembled C-3PO. So what this gentleman is attempting to do is recreate that costume by him dressing up as Chewbacca and having an amputee dress up as C-3PO. I personally think this is actually really funny. I don't know why everybody's getting all offended. He said, you know, this is probably going to offend some people. But here's the thing. If you are an amputee and you haven't learned to live with yourself and you haven't learned to kind of get by based on that, you don't have to do the guy's costume. You don't have to work with him. I think it's really kind of a funny way to point at your own failings and laugh. Or I mean, I don't even necessarily know that it's a failing. But if you look at it and it's kind of like people who get all up in arms about midget tossing. And then you ask the midgets who are being thrown, because obviously they would have to kind of let themselves be thrown. And you say, okay, well, they don't mind it. They it's a way for them to earn money. It's a kind of an interesting way for them to use the challenge that was presented to them as a different way of getting by. So I think this is perfectly interesting and perfectly normal to do something like this. Maybe not carrying around somebody on your back for the entire night, because I do actually kind of think that would get a little old. But there seems to be a lack of fail-safe measures here. For instance, if they already have the harness and everything worked out to actually carry the guy around, guy or girl, who knows, but what happens if there becomes a time in the night where they're just too tired to go on and you don't happen to have that person's wheelchair? You kind of have to have a couple little contingency plans available. Maybe, you know, just have the wheelchair in the car as you drive from party to party. There probably have to be a strict no alcohol policy for the Chewbacca of the group. However, I kind of think it would be really funny, because if this goes through, then you could always have somebody do a Hellboy version of the same thing, or the two people could team up again the next year, because there's a couple different scenes from Hellboy where Hellboy is actually carrying a part of a corpse over his one shoulder as a way of getting around. So if you could kind of do the C-3PO one, it kind of lends itself to a whole bunch of other different amputee costume ideas. So I thought it was kind of cool and wanted to share with the group. Next little thing for you up here is 20 awesome robot Halloween costumes. I'm a huge fan of robots. They have, this is from over at Bottropolis.com. They have Daleks. They have, you could dress up as the Asimo, Honda's lovable humanoid. They have a His and Hers DIY robot costume. I personally think the His and Hers ones are so much better than the rest of the other ones because it's a completely build your own robot kind of thing. They have a couple funny ones where it's just like shirts and hoodies and things like that. But other than that one, my absolute favorite one is what I can only assume to be a father and a son. The father's dressed like Eve from WALL-E, and the kid is dressed like WALL-E. So they actually have this tiny little kid dressed up as a little robot. You have the obligatory RoboCop. You have a Rock'em Sock'em robot, which is actually incredibly well done. And you have probably one of the coolest ones that they have up there is actually a Optimus Prime that transforms. Everybody has this. Everybody who attempts to make a robot costume has this as their like Mount Everest. If you can make a robot costume that can transform from one thing into another, you've earned a special place in robot costume lore. So hats off to the gentleman who did transform into a rather interesting looking Mack truck. Now, if there was somehow that the wheels that actually used in the Mack truck actually worked and somebody could push them around, I think that would be even cooler. But hey, maybe next year, you know? All right, next little thing we have up for you here is Halloween props, the Pie of Sauron. Basically, this is a way to recreate the Eye of Sauron out of a pumpkin. The only thing that I don't like about it is they're using like microcontrollers and LEDs and everything. I personally think that the Eye of Sauron doesn't necessarily need to have a little Knight Rider thing going around the center of it. I think you could carve a perfectly interesting Eye of Sauron out of a pumpkin with little or no problem. So I'm not sure what exactly I'm going to be carving. I've been getting better at actually doing good carvings of pumpkins. I actually had a half attempt at a Ghost Rider pumpkin last year. I had a really cool skull the year before. So I'm going to try and do something along those lines. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a skull. I don't know if I'm going to try a Mario one. I don't know. But I do have a relatively large canvas to work with again this year. I didn't quite go for the 40-pound pumpkin that I had been the past couple years, but hey, you know, the economy's a little bit rougher than it had been, so we're gonna see what we can do, and I'll definitely post pictures of it after I carve it. I'm gonna have to carve it by like Wednesday or Thursday this week because I don't want to attempt to carve it on the last day again. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is working on a working Apple iPhone costume. Now, it's just not just one, it's two. There's two gentlemen who've decided to strap car batteries, full-size 42-inch LCD TVs, and somehow mirror the display from an actual working iPhone to the 42-inch display. If you are willing to spend $2,000 to make your own costume using a TV and a car battery, the entire thing actually weighs over 85 pounds for each costume. So if you're willing to do this, you're a spot apart. Apparently, last year they actually did this, but it was unworthy at a piddly little 32 or 37-inch screen. So they have a full-size 42-inch screen. They have the iPhone sitting there playing in landscape mode. What appears to be the compass app going, so as they walk around, I guess the compass actually adjusts and you can see it on the big screen. This is insane to a level which I don't really understand. I'm perfectly fine doing some interesting scarecrows or stuff like that, but this is weird to the nth degree. All right, now next up we have an iMac Cylon mask is both trick and treat. He appeared to look the base of an old iMac where they actually had like the half circle on there. He appeared to use that as a Cylon mask, a little Knight Rider thing going back and forth, but it's not entirely true, so... Just wanted to kind of put it up there because I thought it was pretty funny. And the next little thing we have up for you here is a honking pumpkin. Yes, you heard me hear correctly. We've all seen different people put up different kinds of pumpkins and hands and everything to scare people on Halloween. This is not necessarily the same way because it just gives you something that you're not entirely expecting. Imagine a carved pumpkin with a giant red button in the center of it. Anybody who sees this button is probably going to push it. What they have on the inside is actually a car horn. What I think, they said it's set to around 105 decibels. I actually put the project page over there. It's over at toddfun.com, which is also a awesome domain name. But I gotta tell you, if they had put one of those massive air horns in there that you see in the like in a hockey stadium or something like that, where it's like this huge, massive blast, I think it would be a little bit funnier, but probably harder to cram inside a pumpkin. So I just wanted to kind of pass it along. Next little thing we have up for you here, in the effort to be a little bit more sustainable in Halloween, you could always try something that looks like this. This is a severed zombie head that actually has ooze leaking out of the one eye, except for the fact that the ooze actually leaks into the mouth of the zombie, giving you a rather gross macabre scene in front of you, except for the fact that there's actually a mini fountain on the inside, and the fountain recirculates the goo that's coming out of the eye and pumps it right back up. So it's a very sustainable chopped off head of a zombie, and we all know that zombies, once they've been decapitated, are basically powerless, so it's a relatively simple and safe way to actually display your kill. Alright, now the next little thing that we have up for you here, first of all I have to give a big hat tip out, because I found this one from the shared stream over at Coffee Hero, but this is actually really scary. Hulu, that lovely website that everybody has been talking about, everybody's kind of on their lips when they're trying to catch up from shows like that, is actually looking to start charging for content. I was honestly hoping that the networks had kind of learned and said, hey, you know what, maybe ad-supported content is a different viewport into what we see. I don't know if it's that they're getting greedy or if they are actually... Are the networks getting greedy and they think they can squeeze more revenue because they see huge readerships and huge numbers and subscriptions, or are the bandwidth bills actually blowing them out of the water? I'm not really sure exactly what it is. I mean, I love the quality of video from Hulu. They've basically shifted an entire population of people away from trying to download series, and now after they've shifted those people away and the people have changed their habits to just going over to Hulu when they miss something, now they're going to throw another monkey wrench in there by expecting people to pay for something that had been free. I know that they're trying to slowly step people to a more, I guess, sustainable for them revenue stream, but this probably isn't going to work. I'm probably going to stop using Hulu if they start charging for things. It's not that I think that I deserve free content, it's just that I don't have extra money to pay for things that are already free online, or already free on the TV. If I can turn on my TV and I'm already paying for cable and I can get that show, then I don't want to have to pay twice for it. It's just the fact that I didn't have the time at that period in time to actually watch it. I love the fact that I can watch it on Hulu, so the wife and I can sit there with the laptop and catch up on episodes of Fringe or whatever it is. That's a nice bonus there. The fact that we're watching ads that we would not have otherwise seen should be enough to kind of pay back for it. So who knows where this is going to go. It's kind of a little bit disappointing at the same time, so... we'll see if it goes through. All right, now the next thing we have up for you here is a lovely section we call Food and Caffeinated Bits, because it has lots of food and caffeinated bits. First of all, I'd like to put a little fun mention out there at the... at the fall festival that we had on the block today, a bunch of neighbors basically closed off the street. We had all kinds of really fun little goodies hanging out there. There was candy galore, cupcakes, all other kinds of fun things. I decided to share some of the coffee that I had recently roasted with some of the friends on the block, and I got to tell you, the response was unbelievable. People who usually put 10 Splendas in a cup of coffee were drinking the coffee black and saying, you know, I've never had coffee that tasted this good, especially black. So I'm really kind of excited about this. I don't know if I'm going to be or what I'm going to be doing with this, but hopefully maybe I might end up having to supply coffee for the next block party. But I got to tell you, it's really kind of cool to share that aspect of coffee lovery to the to other people. You really kind of broach a whole new terrain there. So you take people who drink the normal Wawa, Dunkin' Donuts, which aren't bad. They're just not real good coffee. So if you kind of make the differentiation to yourself, if you kind of make the delineation between the two separate types of coffee yourself, and then you showcase one of the really good versions of coffee. So I showcased a Guatemalan coffee run through a French press, nice dark roast, and it was It was well received by all. I'm currently still hopped up on it and several hours later, but it's just good stuff all the way around. All right, moving right along. Like, what I was originally intending to talk about here was color trends in coffee packaging. One of my favorite websites in the world is colorlovers.com. It's C-O-L-O-U-R, so it's like the British spelling of color. It's colorlovers.com. And what they do is they take palettes out of things that exist in nature now. Now, I'm a big fan of that to begin with, but they also develop and design trends that are currently out there, and sometimes you don't really understand them, and you'd be kind of surprised to see some of the different trends that they actually show in different things. Like, they had bridal dresses, they had flower and floral arrangements for different seasons, and you could kind of see where it'd be easy to pull color palettes out of that. But they actually did one on coffee packaging, and I was, okay, you're going to see two different kinds of coffee color in there, at least personally, from somebody who uses graphic design tools. It's like, you're going to see a dark color, and you're going to see a more coffee with cream kind of color. And I was right, those two are up there. There's kind of a tan, and then there's a dark, dark brown. But there's also kind of a red that seems to be appearing everywhere, light grays. And it kind of shows some of the different lineups of coffee that are actually out there right now. And I love looking at coffee packaging. I don't know what it is. There's just a certain aesthetic that a lot of coffee companies try and push forward. And you can kind of see things from the minimalistic perspective all the way down to, like, the rampant commercialism in some of the other... I mean, it's all commercial, but, like, the misplaced use of over graphic designing something. So you see something that's as cleanly designed as, like, let me pick a real good one. They have a Milano one, or they have a Benopi one, and then you see down to other ones where they have the Green Mountain coffee, where there just seems to be so much going on there that you when you look at it in comparison to some of the other coffee things that are out there, it's like, oh man, you guys kind of missed a... I personally really like clean design. So you look at that and you say, you already had all the color palettes there that were for a really successful design, but you just put too much junk on it. So it's kind of fun. My favorite one out of all of them, I can't actually tell exactly what it is, but it's just Gorilla. It's a really dark red coffee packaging with black accent, and it looks like the silhouette of a gorilla, or a etching of a gorilla. So I just thought it was kind of cool and wanted to share with the group. All right, moving right along here, because there's only so much you can actually talk about color without actually showing it. And this is an audio podcast. We have a really cool post from over at coffeehero.com. Michael Allen Smith apparently went on a little constitutional over to the Vashon Island Coffee Museum. Now, I'm a sucker for pictures of old things. We have tons of different antiques and things that are probably going to be antiques laying around my house, my parents' house, and there's just a certain kind of feeling that you can get from old equipment. And so you can see a German coffee sorter, you can see old scales, you can see different roasting equipment, and a Danish grinding table if you head on over there. And he also has a link to the Flickr set that he has up there, so it's just fantastic, cool stuff that they have over there. There used to be a place at the Jersey Shore that for, I think it was like 25 cents, or no, it wasn't 25 cents, it was like for $5 or something, you could actually go in there and play all of these really, really old arcade games, and it didn't last too long, but it was probably one of my favorite places to go on the Jersey Shore, just because you could actually play and experience some of these older arcade games, so... That's just really, really cool stuff. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is the teapot effect. Have you ever tried to pour anything out of a glass, and then all of a sudden you notice that the surface tension from the water or whatever it is that you're trying to pour is actually run the liquid straight down the side? You can see this in teapots every once in a while. It's called the dribble, where all of a sudden it runs down the underside of it, and it gets this not very uniform stream of water coming off of it. Well, apparently a bunch of physicists have actually railed against this and recreated the coffee pot to redesign the lip at the front to actually counteract this. So I think this is kind of funny that there's an entire blog or an entire blog post dedicated to the physics of teapot technology. So I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty cool and fun all at the same time. Next little thing we have up for you here is an interesting little coffee website that I found. It's called thecoffeedetective.com or coffeedetective.com. It's coffee reviews, a collection of simple reviews written in plain English. Now, I love trying to describe coffee to people, and I think it's a very interesting and real art. And if you ever read any of the cupping blogs or anything like that that are out there. Like, if you go over to Sweet Maria's and you read the different things that they're talking about, the different coffee that they've drank, sometimes it's hard to follow along exactly what all those different flavors profiles mean. You're like, okay, well, what does a hint of this mean? What is overtones of that? What's it mouthfeel? So what this website seems to try to do is actually give you plain English explanations of different coffee that they've tried and different explanations of stuff. So I think this is really kind of cool. I wanted to pass it along because it's something, the simplistic approach to things and the ability to explain complex situations to people, no matter who they are, is something that I really kind of admire. So I wanted to kind of showcase this as an interesting place to go over there and kind of check things out. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is actually, I hate linking to stuff from about.com because it's just kind of irritating. It's such a hodgepodge, nasty site half the time that I don't like doing it. But this is such an interesting article. It talks about the differences between hot cocoa and drinking chocolate. If you've ever had cocoa, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there have, it's traditionally done with powdered chocolate. If you've ever had drinking chocolate, then it's actually done with cream mixed with chunks of chocolate, and that there's a very different taste between the two of them. I've had drinking chocolate. It is unbelievably rich. It's like what ice cream is to gelato when you really compare the two there. So it's an interesting experience, and it's one that a lot of people say, oh, Americans aren't ready for this. Well, it's not that necessarily. I personally don't think it's not that Americans aren't ready for it. It's kind of like people say that Americans don't understand good coffee because they don't drink enough espresso. I think espresso is fantastic. I do, however, think that a cup of coffee measures equally but different the same kind of characteristics for drinking that particular beverage. So, but when you switch over to chocolate, I don't necessarily think that drinking chocolate is all the time superior to cocoa, because I do think there are times when you just need a little bit larger volume. You traditionally drinking chocolate out of a demitasse glass or a demitasse mug or very, very small servings as compared to the larger mugs that you get of hot chocolate. I do think sometimes the volume of the hot chocolate actually helps with the warming feeling that you get, but it's an interesting little article. Actually, if you'd like to have Aztec drinking chocolate, they actually mixed spices in with them so that it was actually spicy chocolate. So it's supposed to be it's supposed to make men virile. I've had it once. It didn't have any effect along those lines, but it did actually end an entirely different taste experience. It's something, even though I knew I was drinking spicy chocolate, it didn't really register that that's actually what I was drinking. I still expected something sweet, had a much more savory, a much more rich tone to it overall. So it's kind of like if you've ever had, you know, a lot of milk chocolate and then you take a piece of dark chocolate, there's just such a different note there that it's kind of hard to compare the two side to side, other than to say that they're equally awesome in their own right. So just want to kind of put this little article up there over drinking chocolate versus hot cocoa. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is an interesting little article from over at a place called liquidheavencoffee.blogspot.com. It's a new scientific survey came out recently that said that researchers have found another good reason to get to your local coffee shop. If you've had previous liver problems, they say that if you drink anything more than up to 3 cups of coffee a day, it can actually significantly reduce the risks of getting further liver damage. So they had a whole bunch of different issues that they actually put up there. So they said there's 766 participants enrolled in hepatitis C antiviral long-term treatment. So there's this one existing disease that they already knew there that actually damages the liver. So they said patients were seen every 3 months during the almost 4 year, and they actually had liver biopsies, this is hardcore here, taken at 1.5 and 3.5 years to determine the progression of the liver disease. And they said that between the two different studies, the patients who drank more than 3 or more cups of coffee were less likely to see their liver disease worsen than non-drinkers. So this is kind of cool when you really think about it. They said overall there was a 50%, they said I'm trying to get the actual statistics here. They said sufferers of chronic hepatitis C and advanced liver disease who drank 3 or more cups of coffee per day slashed their risks of disease progressing by 53% compared to patients who drank no coffee. So I personally think that if you have liver disease in your family, you should probably start drinking a lot more coffee. But, you know, that's probably taking something out of context, which is what these studies do, or what the news media coverage of these studies does all the time. So just kind of be a little bit more aware. The studies listed over there, so you can head on over there and read it. I love the news blurb that gets put out for about the different things, but I don't necessarily always have the time to read the entire thing. So, all right, next up, here's a tiny little blurb from over in Australia. It says, drink exceeds legal caffeine limit. They found that a significant percentage of the drinks that are actually being sold exceeded the legal limit for the amount of caffeine that can be contained in a beverage. They don't list what the legal limit for caffeine contained in a beverage in Australia is, but it kind of got me thinking. It's like, okay, well, should we do that here in the United States? Do you think that we need to kind of legislate moderation? I'm personally somebody who kind of shies away from that kind of legislation, but you got to kind of think about moderation. Do you say, okay, is there a certain point at which you're just drinking pure caffeine and you know that's dangerous? It's the potential for abuse factor's high. It's like, how far into the nanny state do you really want to get? So, I mean, I already know that there's, you know, certain limits for alcohol in beverages, but I'm not really sure what if they're ever going to extend it into caffeine. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is diet-friendly Kirby cupcakes. Yes, you heard me here correctly. These are actually only 100 calories each, and the entire recipe is listed over at SpriteStitch.com. I just thought it was kind of fun and cool. First of all, because I like cupcakes, I think they're actually very tasty. And second of all, because Kirby's kind of fun and cool. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. This has been the somewhat broken apart edition here. I'm still trying to kind of figure out all the phobias of Windows 7, and one of the more interesting things is the program that I use to program all the music that you hear in the background right there is called Jazzler Show. It's a fantastic program, except here's the problem. In the version that I have running on Windows 7 right now, it can't determine the length of any of the clips so that it can't go from one clip into the other. So what I used to do is just have the sequence sit there. So I would hit the first thing and then not have to think about it to the end of the show. Now I actually, whenever I hear the music stop, I actually have to go back and click it to kind of get it to go because it doesn't think that the actual MP3 had any length to it. So I don't know how I'm going to go about fixing this, but it's going to be an interesting challenge. So that about wraps it up here today for the Caffeination Podcast. Today's episode has been brought to you by, I don't know, let's just say the letter R. No particular reason, but it's kind of fun to think about that kind of thing. All right, this has been episode number 378, the Scary Good Edition. We're also going scary long, much longer than I actually wanted to. But if you head on over to www.caffeination.com, that is caffeination.com, that is where you will find all the other episodic nuggets for your enjoyment. I'd like to thank all the people who stuck around to the very, very, very end. And enjoy, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.